You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 9 July. We had Chinese inflation data for June year on year out an hour or so ago, 1%. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Fahima Adia from Momentum. At recent tourism data, I've been going through some number there from Stats SA, seeing some decent growth. Any of the local leisure stocks looking attractive? And a quick touch on how Propu wanted to raise 500 million in an accelerated book build and got over 700 million. Chat with Casey Sprague from AG Capital. Short positions in our retailers. Some of them are really, really big. What's tell us, and more importantly, perhaps, risks involved. And then we're chatting with Refiant. They've got a local AI model with 10x the memory of Claude and ChatGPT. We'll get a sense of what that practically means. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Transnet's bulk rail performance returns to pre-COVID levels, but remaining rail services, including containers, remain in the doldrums. Bloomberg, US strikes Iran and blocks oil sales in a new test of ceasefire. Morning markets, the US was mixed. The S&P down 0.3%, while the Nasdaq was up 0.3%. The East also mixed. We've got Sydney up a couple of points, 0.01%. Tokyo, just over 2% higher. Hong Kong, down 0.75%. And Tencent, a little over 0.5% weaker. Commodities, mostly red. Gold futures, $4,070 an ounce. Brent is the green, $78.93. Platinum, $1,601. Palladium, $1,227. The rand is 16.38. Bitcoin 62,900. Top 40 opening call. Green open expected 315 points or 0.31%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking out with Fahima Deer from Momentum. Fahima, appreciate the early morning time. And I said in the intro, some data out of Stats SA around tourism, hotel occupancies, etc. I was reading over the last day and pondering to myself if there wasn't perhaps some opportunity. Some of our leisure stocks, Sun International, PE of under 8 and dividend yield of just over 8. Soho, PE and dividend both around 6. Low liquidity. But in your sense, is there perhaps some opportunity here in some of these leisure stocks?
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yes, I was taking a closer look at those numbers, and it's great to see we were seeing a meaningful turn in the tourism sector, reaching record levels in 2025. Q1 performance also looking quite strong. But what's important to note, it's not just the foreigners and international tourism that's boosting that number, but domestic tourism has also reached highs. And that really does provide a more stable earnings base for our local companies that benefit from tourism and hospitality. So, yes, I've also taken a look at Sun International this year. I've been quite positive on it. Just looking at the share price performance, it's been up about 32% year to date. And the SunBet's online betting platform has been quite a big driver of growth. We continue to see that gain scale. And I do think that's going to help drive future returns. We've also seen some consistent recovery in that hotel resort side of the business. And like you said, from a valuation perspective, it's undemanding. It's still on a forward P of about 8.1 times. And looking attractive considering the growth we're expecting from this. And also looking at the dividend yield, it's around 8%, a highly cash generative business. So that really does add to the investment case. You know, the only caveat I'd say from a medium term perspective is investors do need to be mindful that government did announce that they are introducing new gambling bills to address online gambling, advertising and so forth. So, yeah, that is one to be mindful of. But overall, I am quite positive on Sun International.
Yeah, I'd actually forgotten about SunBet. And of course, the World Cup has to help. But to your point, regulation changes. We need to see how that will play out. And maybe it benefits them because they are going to be regulated. But we will see how that shakes out. To change tack quickly, Hyprop today announced an accelerated book build that would have been announced trying to get my Tuesday evening after close. They wanted 500 million. They announced yesterday morning that they got 739 million. I'm always amazed by those numbers, but you know, the different worlds here. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the heydays of property, but they did the build. They had some cash already. They say this is not for the announced acquisition of Galleria, that they got other plans in terms of expansion of, for example, city centres in Croatia, solar projects locally, and perhaps some other Eastern European. They're going aggressive in acquisitions.
Yes, definitely. And just looking at the price performance of this one over the past year, it's up about 34%. And despite the higher price, the market was still very positive on this book build. Like you said, it was well oversubscribed. So I just think it really shows that Hyprop has improved credibility with its investors over the past 2 years. It's really improved its operating performance, strengthened the balance sheet, and they've really been liking these acquisitions in Eastern Europe, which is considered quite a high growth market. So it already has more than 30% of its revenue exposure there to Eastern Europe. And like you said, it's also going to be using some of the funds to install solar battery energy at some of its local shopping malls and also to fund some expansion locally. But yeah, looking at it from a valuation perspective, I do think it is looking a bit more fully priced now if you consider the share price performance and also the dividend yield of about 5%. There probably are higher returning REITs out there that one could consider.
Yeah, 5% is nice, but for a REIT, it's a little bit low, and it's trading at or around book value, which says perhaps it is fully priced. But we'll leave it there for him, dear Momentum. Always appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today on LinkedIn, back to those leisure stocks. But back to you. Are you holidaying more or less than you have been doing in past years? How's your holidays doing? Let us know. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Standing up with Casey Sprague from AG Capital, where she is the market strategist. Casey, always appreciate the early morning time. A fascinating report you put out on short positions in our market. For listeners out there, short is usually a hedge fund, a trader. They've borrowed stock. They sell it into the market, expectation that it will fall, and they can buy it back at a lower price, at a profit, and then return to the lender. In other words, sell high, buy low. Casey, this is a regular occurrence in markets the world over, and in the South African case, you just as data that then is supplied by the JSE, who's able to say what the size of short positions are on individual stocks.
Yes, good morning, Simon, from a sunny Windhoek side in Namibia from my side. But yes, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, we released a piece now this week. It stemmed off a conversation I'd actually had with our CIO, who had been, as you mentioned, watching this data via the JSC and sort of noticed this trend. And I think just at a very high level, you know, retail is, of course, a working capital business. Mm-hmm. So we noticed that, you know, when margins compress and stock stops moving, you're not starting to get a scenario where you don't just lose earnings. You know, the balance sheets, of course, start to fray. And that's when shorts start to move in from, you know, hedge funds such as ourselves and other speculative capital.
And some of these numbers, I mean, and maybe they're not, but to me, they look really, really chunky. You got Truvis, you got Spar, you got Dis-Chem, almost 25%, 20.8%, almost 15% of total free float has been borrowed. That looks like a chunky number to me.
Yes, no, it's starting to grow quite significantly. I mean, we can look more from, say, a top level. But I think it's quite interesting if you start drilling down to, you know, specific names, because I think there's a lot of nuance between the various names. It's not just a simple sort of, you know, short story. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I think, you know, you mentioned looking at sort of Spar. I think Spar is the clearest example of where market concerns are actually firmly grounded in observable fundamentals. Mm-hmm. You know, you're seeing a counter with a history of elevated debt and complex international expansion that's really sort of destroyed value. So I would say in simple terms, in Spar's case, the market is effectively saying that, you know, this balance sheet is too tight for earnings power of the business. So you see some form of recapitalization, you know, maybe a rights issue or something similar is a realistic scenario. So that's why, in from that case, I would say SPAR screens as the most fundamentally justified short in that way. But then, if you look at a name like Truist, for example, that's a sort of slightly different story. It stands in a bit of contrast to SPAR. That company is still showing positive profitability, but it carries a very large debtors book, which is effectively straddling that line between, I would say, almost a retailer and a financing company. So the market is short Truist, not just because I would say, P&L has necessarily fallen apart, but more just because of it's very nervous around a large debtors book. And then that's when, the mark this sort of makes it the short of it a more sort of extrapolative, as you would say. The bear case is that this could go wrong rather than this has already gone wrong. And that direct, I think that distinction is important when we talk about, embedded value versus sort of outright distressed finance, et cetera. So there's nuances around the names.
That's a great point, and they've all got a different story. And my sense is there's always a bit of short. We've got Woolies, we've got Pep, we've got ShopRite, all at around 2-point-something%. There's always going to be some short position. That's what markets do. But then there's what's called the days to cover. Now, I've seen it across my trading career. You get what sometimes is called a short squeeze. In other words, I don't know, something happens. A really good piece of news comes out from a heavily shorted stock, and then the scramble to the exit, because for short sellers to close, they need to buy and they need that liquidity. And in some of these cases, I mean, days to exits are running at plus 20 days. Maybe I'm just a coward. That would scare me.
No, 100%, and that's why it's a space that you really need to sort of be careful around that. I mean, you mentioned specifically the concentration and sort of days to cover. So I would say, given the size of these short positions relative to your sort of average daily trading volumes, some of these names would take weeks to buy back if shorts needed to sort of cover. So if you look at, for example, so I'm thinking off the top of my hand, in about Truist or so, I think the current short interest equates to roughly 36 days of average traded volume. In Dis-Chem, the figure is actually closer to 2 months, so that's around 57 trading days, which makes any force covering, extremely highly price sensitive. So our CIO actually uses the word sort of, it's often when it comes to derivatives trading, the tail wagging the dog scenario. So you often find with these sort of tools, so, whether they're looking at index futures, options, or swaps or whatever, often we see that, referencing these names, you can also create additional short exposure beyond the cash market, and that really amplifies moves when positions are rebalanced, which is what I think you alluded to now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to be clear, I've done a little bit of trading in my life, but these numbers are giant. We'll leave it there. That was a fascinating article, Casey Sprague, market strategist, AG Capital. Join FinTalk. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm talking with Matthew Haswell. He's co-founder of Refiant, just launched a large language model, LLM. Protea is the name. It is up, it is running. The key story is a 10 million token context window. For context, that is about 10x bigger than what Claude offers, what ChatGPT offers. Matthew, appreciate the time. Let's start with context window. It sounds impressive. You're 10x bigger than the two big names in it, but what does it really actually practically mean?
Thanks. So just to give you a better idea of what that really means, to put it in context, pardon the pun, it allows you to basically process more information or more tokens in any given time period, so in one go. So to give you an idea, you could look at 7.5 million words. You could potentially go back in 4 to 5 years worth of email history or chat history, depending on what you use. And it's equivalent of just over 80 novels. The value of that, if you start thinking about different industries, for example, insurance, you can go through a whole lot of, fraud and risk claims over many, many years, over many conversations. You could look at ingesting the entire code base if you're more technical and in sort of an engineering business. For example, legal teams could look across 500 or 600 contracts. So that's, in practical terms, some of the value. Why the other guys haven't been able to do it to date is because it's very expensive to do at scale. And it's very difficult to do concurrently because the models start to hallucinate and give you sort of rubbish answers if you do it at this level.
So there are a couple of points I want to touch on there, and we'll get to the efficiency and energy. But your point there around that, was it Llama 4, which claimed 10 million, but it got messy in the middle. So it would start well, it would end well, but it got really messy in the middle part. And part of your story, as I understand, is you've solved for that.
Exactly. So we've done internal benchmarking. That's pretty standard in the industry. A lot of benchmarks get published. Sometimes people call for a white paper just to make sense of the technical breakthrough. Mm-hmm. We have done that, but our approach has been to say, let's put it in the public domain and let people play around with it and try to scrutinize it. Everything we've done to date has proven that it works, particularly with the middle problem. And we've done that across a range of different data sets that we've put through the model. But again, we want the public to kind of vote on it and see what they think. Part of the reason we can get there is because of a novel approach that we've taken and our architectural approach that's a little bit unique. And we have actually filed a patent in that direction. So we'll see. We'll find out now, you know, once we launch this. No one's been bold enough or stupid enough to do this just yet, to actually put it on the public domain. You're right in saying there have been other claims. There have been claims. There's a model that's just over 10 million, but you have to sign up for a wait list and wait till the end of the year to see if it actually holds up. We don't want to do that.
Yeah.
We actually want people to use it.
You're taking the, from my scary youth of code, what? Real code is test live. It's hairy and sometimes it works. I take your point. There have been claims and there's been wait lists, and I actually reminded of one. I think I'm 18 months into the wait, so I think I can give up on that part. I mentioned as well that in many senses, this is an energy efficiency story that you've got. The 10 million is impressive, but it's making it, you know, cost effective and energy efficient.
It is. So that's where we started, actually. So the original breakthrough we had was in compression. So we were able to figure out how do you, and we just started with large language models because we thought that was a good place to start. But we can actually apply this in other areas. But what we figured out was how to compress these large language models down. So you save memory and compute, but you don't lose fidelity or accuracy of the models. So if you're using a model that's an open source model, and we're able to effectively change some of the dynamics related to those models, you can't really tell the difference. And some of the benchmarks we run have shown a drop-off of anywhere from 1% to 5% in sort of accuracy across a suite of benchmarks that are standard industry best practice. So for all intents and purposes, it feels like the same model, but you're actually using a lot less energy, a lot less compute, which saves a lot of money. And with the broader sort of narrative happening around the bottleneck in the industry, with AI data centers being built out, some of the constraints, that's where we started. We subsequently moved forward and figured out how to now expand the context window, and that's what we've launched. So we're starting with a 5 and a 10. We're actually doing a 1, 5, and 10 million launch, and then we're going to look to sort of drip feed a few more a little bit later in the next couple of months.
Is this something that I could run on a high-end home workstation or laptop? I mean, again, in the early days of Llama, I was running it on my MacBook Pro. It was slow at points, but I mean, it kind of worked.
So you can. Our approach is, for now, we've launched it in our own platform. So for all intents and purposes, it'll be hosted on our behalf. But you can deploy it in a private cloud. So if it's an enterprise customer, for example, they can deploy it in their world, or bring your own cloud is a technical terminology that's often used. But we've actually demonstrated we can do this locally. So we ran it on a MacBook Pro, Thunderbook MacBook Pro. We did tests over about 4 to 6 hours, and that was meant to run in 80 gigabytes. We did in 12. And we had the drop-off I just mentioned a little bit earlier. So very, very similar accuracy. We did in the Faraday cage as well. So it wasn't connected to anything, just to prove it. So to answer your question, yes, we can. And I think that's more of the novel breakthrough we've had, is that you're able to run these models in a different way now. Yeah. You save costs, but it also opens up new conversations, which for us is quite interesting.
It is that. You're ticking a ton of the boxes. You're ticking a much big context window. We spoke around. I mean, it is a lot of words. It's a lot of scope in that. You're also ticking the story around cost. We had all the token maxing, which was sort of the big story in the first 6 months of this year. And then, of course, the bills start to arrive. And a whole lot of chief financial officers were like, yo, we're not so sure about that. And this kind of solves the problems there.
It should. Look, I mean, what we've launched, we're not being exorbitant, or at least we don't think we are.
Sure.
We're using a model, because it's an open source model that we started with, that we've actually been using under the hood. Mm-hmm. That should be priced very reasonably. We've done that intentionally. So we're not launching this as a frontier model and charging an incredibly expensive amount. Typically, it's input and output tokens, and they're quite expensive. We've come in at a cost-effective manner because we think that's how things should be. And that's part of our approach. Going forward, whenever we release something else, we're going to have a similar mindset, because we actually want this to be accessible. To your exact point, because there's been a lot of concerns around token maxing, and it's not, I think, not sustainable for a lot of businesses.
Yeah, I'd love my Claude. I have a huge amount of fun. But I'm getting rate limited in a $200 a month account, and not everyone has the $200 a month to get rate limited. We leave it there. It's Matthew Haswell, co-founder, Refined. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Craig Stewart yesterday. He MD at Ultron Digital Business. They had an employee technology experience index, first of its kind, trying to get a sense of how the tech works for employees. We asked you if your work tech was up to scratch. Over half of you said it was a mixed bag. The rest split between, no, it all seems to be stuck in the 90s. And the final bunch of you saying, yeah, it works absolutely great. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Rising inflation pressure.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.